T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go heavy.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
What was the biggest difference in the Blackhawks game? Where do you think the series is headed now? And can Connor McDavid be stopped?
I think you saw last night the difference between a desperate hockey team and a team that felt really good about what it did in game one. The Oilers were the desperate hockey team. You cannot give them an inch because they'll take a mile. And you saw that. It just takes the slightest crease for Connor McDavid to break through. And he had those grade A chances, as they say, in the first period. And he took advantage. You know, he scored on his first two shifts of the game. He was ready. They were ready. They were more prepared for that moment than the Blackhawks, who I think that afterward, Jeremy Colliton, give him credit for acknowledging this postgame. We can't have any passengers. And when he says that, he was referring to guys who did not raise their level of play or their intensity, and they were overmatched.
Mully and Hall.
I get a kick out of you guys.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Carlos Rodon left Monday night's game after 2 innings and 26 pitches, 22 of which were strikes. How disconcerting is that for the White Sox?
He's been injured for a long time now, a lot of his career, and it's a pity because I don't know that we're ever going to see the best of him. And I think he's a really good dude, and I feel bad for him. But when you see a guy's velocity dip like that, that's alarming. And shoulder stiffness, the starts in the neck, it just sounds awful. It just doesn't sound like the sort of thing that you're going to really just bounce back from. So not a good thing. I would be very careful with Dane Dunning, frankly, right now. And I am definitely concerned about the starting pitching of the Chicago White Sox.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yeah, I got to tell you, David, I'm delighted that I got 10 years of glory in front of me, but I'm worried about the pitching staff in the near future here. And, you know, talking to Josh Nelson, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, I got to just wrap my mind around the idea that Dane Dunning is going to be an answer to part of the problem here. And then I think to myself, Jimmy Lambert, Carlos Rodon, like, do I want another guy coming off of surgery, trying to ramp up? Maybe start him if you got, like, the first game of a doubleheader. So, you know, it's 7 innings top, you know, get through 3. Okay, here we go.
Well, let's look at this, because I don't think you need to necessarily, if you're the White Sox, do anything you wouldn't be comfortable in doing under ordinary circumstances, because you do have options, and you do have a shortened season, and you do have a deep bullpen, so you could get away every fifth day, perhaps, with taking an unorthodox approach to it that start. So if it's a combination of Gio Gonzalez and Ross Detweiler and Evan Marshall and whoever else may fit into that equation, I think that's the way you try to fit it. You don't have to worry about necessarily rushing somebody like Dunning if he's not ready and if you have those valid concerns, because, hey, nobody's saying that Ronaldo Lopez is out for the year. I think that he could come back, Mully, and give you some innings and hopefully have found whatever it was that was the source of the inconsistency and his injury. I don't know that that's the answer, but it is a possible one. It's probably more likely than Carlos Rodon coming back, just based on, you know, he had a pain in the neck and then his shoulder soreness, and he has a combination of those things. Not good. Not good, because I think that was your biggest concern with him coming back this, not this fast, but the first time that we have seen him since the injury is re-injuring himself again.
Yeah. No, it just makes you, kind of crazy. There's so many injuries, and it's hard to duck him. I mean, here's the thing. You mentioned Ronaldo Lopez, right? So it starts with no Michael Kopech. Now you got no Ronaldo Lopez. Maybe he's coming back, right? Jimmy Lambert was one of those guys that had a chance. He's already gone. I'm just saying, had a chance to, like, help you a little bit, but he's already gone. Carlos Rodon was in your starting rotation. There's a problem there. How confident are you that Gio Gonzalez can last an entire season? I know it's a shortened season, but that seems like you're going to put a little pressure on the bullpen. Now, listen, I'm in panic mode, clearly, so I'm looking at it with the glass half full, and, you know, maybe I should go the other way because there are other
Molly,
options.
As a public service, at this point in time, I'd like to remind you, it's a 5-game winning streak, not a 5-game losing streak. Okay,
I know.
So
I know.
The glass is pretty half full. With Gio Gonzalez, I think if you don't expect him to go more than 5 innings during his starts, I think that realistically you can kind of patch it together. My question would be to you as a Sox fan, and I wonder what the psyche is of the Sox executives. Are they going to look to a trade, as we kind of discussed, to address this? Would they be more or less likely to do that given the shortened season because of the – you know, it's odd. You've seen a couple of trades happen already in MLB, but it's not something that you would necessarily welcome or maybe even initiate. But do you think they would go that route to try to address this problem?
Listen, I mean, here is the problem with that idea. And when is the last time that the White Sox, you thought they could go for it a little bit and get a veteran pitcher and bring him in? And what did you give up for that? I don't want to see that happen, okay? Don't give up some young teenager that's going to wind up in a BMW commercial after, you know, James Shields ruined your life. I'm just not.
Yeah, that didn't go so
okay.
Well, did it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to point fingers. I don't want to name names. I just – that one – you just kind of get stuck in my craw when I hear what you're saying here. I think I would prefer – did I not see that Jared Kelly, the young high school kid, I think I might prefer seeing him in the major leagues.
How about
he's joining Schomburg.
How about Crochet?
No, I'm making an absurd comment because they're not going to bring a high schooler in. But they did. They added Matt Thompson and Jared Kelly to their list of guys in Schomburg just to keep an eye on them. I don't think they have any idea of bringing either guy up, but Crochet is a legitimate. He's probably going to come up at some point.
Do you know any veteran left-handers who pitch pretty well in that ballpark who are in the free agent season next year and it might be in a walk year and available on the open market because the team has a surplus of pitching depth? Do you know anybody that fits that category?
Well, let's just have a toast, nice glass of wine, and think that through a little bit. I'll clean up. Don't worry.
What would the Sox give up for Jose Quintana?
Not much. No. Not as much as they got. How about that?
Yeah, and the Cubs would be foolish to dangle him, I think, because that would be somebody that's going to help them. They're 8-2, and they have aspirations that are realistic in terms of a championship, in terms of the playoffs. And that is just – I'm preemptively addressing the question that I think I've already received via Twitter at some point in time because Q is in his final season as a Cub.
All right, I've got one here for you guys. What do you think about this? Right, he's a veteran. He's in the last year of his contract. He's on a bad team who is willing to dump a salary. He's a local lad, Domer, Jeff Samardzija. For a player to be named later, you take on the salary for 2020. He walks at the end of the year. What do you got to lose,
Kevin? That's a lot of salary still left, right?
That's a lot of salary. They have it. They've got it.
Yeah.
Come on, Jerry, step up.
How good is Samardzija pitching right now?
Not
because
very.
That. Yeah. I don't know about that. Didn't he have a problem with Coop? Didn't he have issues with Coop?
And
if you have issues
have
with Coop once,
with Coop?
I don't know. I mean. If you have a problem with Coop, if you can't get along with Coop, who can you get along
with?
I'm
a solutions man. I'm trying to talk us into a solution
I don't
here.
Know.
All right?
I just,
I'm a thinker. I'm a worker.
But I don't want to give up anything, right? I mean, anything. because when you thought you were just throwing a guy in at one point, you made a bad blunder. There's a BMW commercial out there that I have to see every once in a while.
Who would be that prospect you're afraid of parting with, though? I mean, in terms
any one of them, I'm telling you, I live in fear of a guy. And you know, in fairness, they were asked for this player, and they were like, "Yeah, you know, what, how old is that kid? He's like 17. He's not kid. I mean, have you seen him? I haven't seen. Have you seen him? Well, why would we see him? He's 17. Trade him."
I understand why you'd be kind of triggered by that. But while we're suggesting or posing names of former Chicago pitchers who might be on the trade market because of their contract status, there's a guy in Philadelphia with a beard that is pretty good in October and September that might
be
available.
Is he on the market? Really?
Jake Arrieta.
Is he available?
I don't know if he's available, but who knows what the Phillies are facing.
You'd have to give up a lot. Like, again, I like the way the future looks. I don't want to give up anything. You know, Ryan Goings adds a speed element. They've got him on the roster. Could you give up someone like that? Okay, maybe.
Well, that's good. Now, see, the point of this exercise is to have you reinforce your faith in the next 10 years, because you threw that out there, and you said for the next 10 years, and if you're worried about the next 10 years, you're not going to overreact to a need here on August 4th in the middle of this weird season.
Yes, I'm, and when I say the next 10 years, I'm really saying the next 7 years, right? I mean, how long is Louis Robert under contract? Till 2027, something like that. So that's kind of you're going to have to win a World Series in the next 7 years. Let's put it
that
way.
By the way, I was really disappointed in you yesterday because all the things that we talked about, you did not wish Louis Robert a happy birthday, and he turned 23 yesterday, and I thought you would have that circled on your calendar.
I know. I felt awful about that. I apologize. I saw that it was his birthday, and I actually I don't know how we didn't articulate that, because he's a grown man. I mean, we saw him come up. We saw him as a little baby, and now look at him. He's a grown-ass man.
And the Sox have him signed until probably, you know, through his 20s, and that would be great over the next few years as he continues to get better and better, that you don't have to worry about these constant questions about free agency and trades and all those things, because he is here to stay in center field. And did you see the metric yesterday? I think Fangraphs said he is the second best defensive outfielder already based on their metrics in baseball.
Wow. You know, let me tell you something. They're going to have to rewrite the metrics. They're going to have to find new math. We need to invent another number to try to figure out how to describe one Louis Robert.
I think you're right.
Okay. Invent a number. Okay. The number Z. What? That's a letter.
30 or thereabouts.
Let's see what Bruce
has
to say.
We'll talk to Bruce Levine next. That's fair. It's Mully and Haw, the score.
McNeil and Parkins, Chicago's most listened to afternoon sports radio show. Covering all of Chicago's teams. From the daily wins and losses to the biggest moments in Chicago sports history. Listen in your car, on your ride home from work, or from your smart speaker on the radio.com app at home. Mac and Parkins, Chicago's most listened to afternoon sports radio show. 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's sports station.
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670 The Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a cheetah can run. And as far as I know, cheetahs are speedy.
I went ahead and broke the story on Twitter, and then, of course, had to write a story on the website at 670thescore.com.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I loved you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to our friend Bruce Levine. The Score's baseball expert joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Winning and winning and winning, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Yes, yes. Winning is all about Chicago. I don't know right now if it is going to be Hendricks or Darvish to start against Giolito in the World Series in October. But I think we need to start talking about it.
Well, let's talk about, before we get to that point, Bruce, obviously we've been discussing what the Sox are going to do with the fifth starter spot now that Carlos Rodon looks like he's out, with Lopez out. What direction will they turn, and do you expect them to be in the trade market?
Yes, if they, you know, if they can find a trading partner. You know, we're 10 games into the season for most teams. Some of them have only played three, unfortunately. And, you know, finding a partner and then deciding what young player you want to trade, or what two young players you want to trade during this shortened season, and what the prize is worth in 2020 is the charge of the upper management to decide. You know, what is this season worth to you as far as making trades, either the Cubs or White Sox? Cubs for a bullpen guy, White Sox maybe for a starter at this point. What is this season really worth to you as far as young people go? How far do you go? So I think that's one question. But answering your question directly, yesterday the White Sox signed a former Cub and a former White Sox, Clayton Richard, to a minor league deal. He's at their Schaumburg facility now and will try to get ready, but he's stretched out. He's getting stretched out. Mike, you're next. I wouldn't laugh if I were you.
I'm not. I just, like, I saw that, Bruce, and I thought, like, wow, like, we're really, I mean, hey, listen, Coop loved the kid, right? I mean, there was something to work with there. How long has he been at it? That was a long time ago.
Well, I mean, he pitched well for the Cubs in the bullpen, if you remember, just a few years ago. So it's a guy. He's a guy. Russ Detweiler, probably the better choice. Dane Dunning, down at Schaumburg as well. That is another choice. You know, it's been a great news with the White Sox streaking here and showing great promise with their young players and their position players. You know, they've been outstanding. But losing three pitchers in a week, Lambert, Lopez, and now most likely Rodon, that is something that most teams cannot handle. You know, the regular season of 162 games or in a shortened season. So, the White Sox are hurting. I talked to Renteria with a group of reporters last night afterwards. He said that it's too early to speculate whether it'll be Detweiler. Detweiler has been a godsend for the White Sox, done a great job in the bullpen. But at this point, he's very close to being overused. Five appearances in 10 games, back-to-backs that saved them the last 2 days. They have to slow their roll as far as using him. And if they're going to stretch him out, how do you get him stretched out five or six innings after shortening his arm up in the bullpen? So these are some of the things that they'll be looking at late last night into today and moving forward.
Bruce, opponents are hitting 156 against Cubs starting pitchers. It's the lowest batting average allowed by any team's rotation through 10 games of a season in the live ball era. I know you've covered a lot of baseball, but that goes back a long way. Alec Mills was the latest guy to pitch a gem last night. Jose Quintana is throwing bullpen sessions. What do they do with six quality starters?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that. You know, the way, look, how many pitchers of quality have we seen go down across Major League Baseball in 10 days, right? I mean, you know, you have to be very lucky to get through this without any injuries. So the other part of it is they can use all the quality pitching they can get, because with all due respect, the Cub pitchers have pitched extremely well. Tip of the hat to them, a salute. But it's Pittsburgh and it's Kansas City, okay? Two very anemic offenses. You have to go out there and win those games. The Cubs have done that. The pitching's been outstanding. But let's not make them into the 27 Yankees or the 2016 Cubs yet. They still have a long way to go here. So from that perspective, you know, you need Quintana. If he can be there in 2.5 or 3 weeks from now, and again, another good side session yesterday after 38 pitches on Saturday. So he's moving in the right direction for them to be ready, and they will certainly need him 3 weeks from now if he continues on that track.
Bruce, when we talk about the game itself and where the state of it is, and aren't we worried about it continuing, do you think that the stories of a parting in Atlanta with the Miami Marlins, the stories of a couple guys going to a casino with the St. Louis Cardinals. Do you think these are now kind of cautionary tales for players? Do you sense that there's going to be a more serious approach here after a couple of teams having outbreaks?
Well, John Mozeliak, the Cardinals general manager, said yesterday that they're convinced that the players caught this in St. Louis and that this was the end result of testing once they got to Milwaukee, that it wasn't contracted in Milwaukee and spread that quickly. So that's his theory. They all are theories at this point. I don't know how you monitor. I mean, every team now has these monitors, and they watch how people socially distance. They watch how they mask. They watch how they portray, you know, what they're supposed to do in the clubhouse, on the road when they go. But I don't know how you babysit every single guy. I think everybody knows how serious this is, and that if you go out, you are risking yourself and teammates. But so are you, so am I, so is David, you know, going out there right now, going to the store or walking into, you know, a convenience store, and there's five people wearing masks and there's one that isn't. You know, so you walk right out or you go about your business and get your coffee and leave. So it can be as innocuous as that. I just have a hard time pointing fingers unless we know direct incidents that have been, you know, confirmed by people, and that we move forward. You know, we always want to find someone to blame in these circumstances. The truth is still that 28 teams have done exceedingly well up to this point of adhering to the medical protocol that's set up by Major League Baseball.
Bruce, the Cardinals have had 13 members of their organization, 7 players, test positive. Many of them are still in Milwaukee awaiting another negative test before they can return. The schedule says the Cubs go into St. Louis on Friday for that series, and it looks like that would be the next time, the first time the Cardinals would play after a long layoff. What do you think the chances are that happening, and what does that do to a team to kind of go that long without playing? Is that an advantage to the Cubs or the Cardinals?
It's not an advantage to anybody. I mean, it could be an advantage to the Cubs, but it's not an advantage to Major League Baseball or the fans who want integrity in the game and want competitive balance. Okay, David? I mean, that's it. And guys, we're getting to the point where, you know, if you have another team that has a breakout, I mean, they're gonna be without these players who've tested positive, 7 of them, we don't know the names, for at least 10 days. Before they go through protocol, all get tested multiple times, are shut down for 7 days, then have to test negative for a number of days after that. So you get to the competitive balance part of it. Forget about the medical, which is so serious, but the competitive balance of this starts to become an issue for teams like St. Louis. You know, people were saying, well, okay, Miami, competitive balance really not that important because they weren't deemed a very good team. Now you're looking at the St. Louis Cardinals, the defending National League Central champions, and a team that a lot of people picked to win this division and maybe even go further. So from all of that, you start to worry about that as being an impact on the game, as well as the medical issues that are obvious.
When we talk about the fact that both our teams are winning in the fashion in which they are there more similarities or differences in the way that they're doing it, in your opinion?
Well, the starting pitching has been so outstanding for the Cubs. I mean, that stands out. And you know, you guys have pointed out, you know, as we've talked over the last week or 10 days, you know, how good it's been. The bullpen is slow to come along, but the last two nights are encouraging for the Cubs, who've had shutout performances from their bullpen as well. But, you know, the offenses are similar in some ways, even though, you know, the Cubs have shown they can win these games by scoring just a couple of runs. I just think there are two offenses that can be tremendously explosive. I think there are a lot of similarities in that. The White Sox bullpen is more of a shutdown bullpen, more of a group that's proven. The Cubs are still on the come when it comes to that. Defensively, both teams have played very well. Okay, and the Cubs had one of their very best games in a long time yesterday, with Baez being Baez, making great tags, and you saw Bodhi with 3 sensational plays yesterday at third base. So pitching and defense, we always link them together. That's been the case. So the White Sox have played better defense as well. They've gotten a very good leadership and defense, mostly from their catchers. You know, the bad throw by McCann yesterday was one thing out of the box. But in general, you know, the Grandal signing has been excellent. McCann being a number two, probably the best number two catcher in baseball out there right now, an all-star in 2019. So a lot of things going very well for the Chicago Cubs and White Sox, but the similarities are there. But, you know, I think ultimately the pitching of the White Sox starting staff has been better, and I think that's why you've seen them win games up until the unfortunate circumstance last night with Rodon.
Bruce, the football adage is if you have two quarterbacks that you're playing, it means you don't have one. And I wonder if you believe the same is true with closers. And you look at the Cubs situation, and Rowan Wick gets a four-out save last night. Does that make him the guy next time that there's a save situation, or is it Jeremy Jeffress? Or do you like this committee approach that David Ross talked about yesterday?
Yeah, he said it like you said, David. It's going to be closer by committee for now. He will go with matchups, so he's not deeming Wick as the closer. And he did admit that they were close to bringing in, you know, Kimbrel in the 12th inning 2 days ago. So was that a circumstance of them having more confidence in him or running out of pitchers? You know, you make the call on that one. But I think getting Kimbrel, you know, back into where he needs to be mentally, more so than physically, is the key to their season. It's going to be hard to find guys in the independent league and places like that that they're scouting right now to replace the quality of what they expect from Kimbrel in the back end. And, you know, the bullpen, you know, again, is showing some good signs here. A little bit of confidence will go a long way, but it is all matchup right now for David Ross and the Cubs until they figure this thing out. 8-2 is a pretty good place to start figuring things out from.
Bruce, we're out of time, but is there a plan for Kimbrel? I mean, what are they going to do with him? I mean, he's still on the team. At some point, they clearly have to use him.
Yeah, so the two things is they're working on the space between his ears as far as working hard on getting his confidence back. And also the pitching group are working with him on some deception in his motion so that it's not so predictable, that it's fastball, breaking ball across the same plane coming in at the same very close velocities. You know, obviously the breaking ball is less, but the eye level is the same. So working again on that changeup, trying to change the eye plane on the hitters, that's a key for him. But it's the mental aspect that has to be worked on and accomplished to get Kimbrel back. And I still think it's a key to their season to get him back where he needs to be.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Good stuff,
guys,
Bruce.
Have a great day, okay? Thank you.
You too, buddy. Yep. God bless. Be safe. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Blackhawks lose. They fall in Game 2 to the Oilers of this epic 5-game play-in series, which is now tied at 1 game apiece. Keep it on The Score as we recap the loss, analyze what went wrong, and get you ready for Game 3 right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think it's tough against any team, but especially against them. They got so much talent up front. It's hard to come back from, and they do a good job of shutting it down defensively. And obviously we weren't ready to go and let up a couple goals in the first few minutes. And those are things we got to tighten up for next game, or it's going to be a short series. So it's our job to respond, and I think we'll do that.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. That is the voice of Kirby Dach, and it is their turn to respond. And, boy, you know, you thought it might be a short series. You thought it might be a series that would end pretty quickly, but you thought that was because the Blackhawks were taking over, and now here we are. You hear that kind of a response. And, I mean, it's an honest response, don't get me wrong. But, they certainly did not take the advantage of that first punch that landed. And you really wanted them to kind of land the knockout blow, which, of course, you put a team in a hole two games, they're going to say goodbye. Now they got to be flying high. The Edmonton Oilers must be feeling great this morning.
They must be, because they responded to the moment in a way the Hawks just weren't able to. And Kirby Dach had nothing to apologize for. He was one of those guys that did bring it. He became, you know, the first teenager to score multiple points in a playoff game for the Blackhawks since Eddie Olczyk. And I think that is, I think, representative of the kind of progress he's made in just by having the time off. He got his legs under him. He is a weapon. You see him now. They're relying upon him on special teams. He's on the ice more. You wonder if next game, we'll talk to Charlie Roumeliotis in a little bit here, but will you wonder if he'll be elevated to the second line because Dylan Strom was really bad. And I think guys like Strom, and I'm not picking on just Strom, but there were players whose inexperience, frankly, showed last night. They were not able to match the intensity level of the Oilers. Boqvist, Nylander, Strom are three guys as an example, and Doc brought it. I think DeBrincat was pretty good with two assists, but the Hawks now have a series on their hands. I said Hawks in five at the beginning. I'm going to stick with that. I think we saw last night a great player doing great things in Connor McDavid, and the Hawks just didn't have an answer, and that's understandable, and you knew that was going to be probably inevitable at some point during the series.
Yeah, I was hoping it wouldn't be. Like, I understand what you're saying, but I think, again, I think everybody knew going into that game that Connor McDavid had scored a power play goal to start the scoring in game one, right? But then the Blackhawks came back and they buried a good Edmonton team, and Edmonton got a couple goals late to make it look closer than it was. That was a very lopsided game, game one. And then you knew that he was going to be under a lot of pressure. There was a lot of talk about him, about his personality. He's the captain, but look at him. He's not pushing anyone. He's got this personality that's very even keel. The kind of things people talk about when you don't have success, when you're the best player on a team, that creates a lot of pressure on the player. And to let him score as quickly as he did took a lot of that pressure off. And then, boom, he gets the second one. And frankly, from that point on, listen, the Hawks fought really hard and they got back in that game. And, you know, it was unfortunate that they couldn't have been the team that scored that first third period goal. That was the decider. But you really felt like he was back in that series. They were back in the series. When you let someone score that quickly, and frankly, that effortlessly, to open a game, you're playing from a deficit, and you're kind of, it's just, you got to wonder how ready you are when you don't expect that guy's going to strike.
It just reminded how limited you were defensively. I mean, when you went right by Boqvist, and then he went right by Mata, and you were 4 minutes into the game, and he had done what he had done and given them, you know, a two-goal lead, that was like, okay, this is going to be a problem tonight. And the Hawks fought back, and I felt like they were really in that game up until the third period when they gave up those two goals in 40 seconds, and Corey Crawford had a sort of a misplay, and you felt like they were just mentally out of it at that point, kind of exhausted by, you know, coming back and not being able to capitalize on a couple power play opportunities that were golden opportunities. But this is also, we credit the Hawks for having this experience, the core four guys with Kane and Taze and Keith and Crawford. And you sometimes forget that they are also the youngest team, even with that experience, the youngest team in the field. And it showed. And I felt like it showed last night. And you can't have that happen again. You've got to have their skill kind of be more obvious. And now it's a challenge for Jeremy Colliton. He's got to find a way to limit the chances for McDavid, be a little bit more physical, be a little bit more and possess the puck better than they did in game two, because in game one, that was why you limited the chances of Draisaitl and why you limited the chances of Connor McDavid. You were possessing the puck enough to make it
right.
You were playing defense by playing offense, and that was effective, and you didn't see that last night.
Yeah, it listen, you know, it's a series now, and I think that The Blackhawks, again, I thought Dustin was correct when he said that it felt like they had landed kind of a knockout blow in game one, and now it feels like they've taken one, right? So you just got to understand that, you know, it's in a playoff situation, regardless of sport, you got to be able to shake off the bad and come back and find a way to counterpunch.
Absolutely. That's the challenge now, and you got to find a way to do that, and that'll be a good test for this young Hawks team and some of the players we just mentioned and the coach. And, Molly, I think that it's interesting to see the direction of this team. We talk about, you know, where the White Sox are headed with their youth, and the Hawks have similar hopes of kind of maintaining this consistency. And yesterday we got a sort of a glimpse of their future. We're going to talk to Charlie Roumeliotis from NBC Sports Chicago, but he had an interview with Danny Wirtz, who was making the rounds in the last couple of days. He's in the bubble, the interim president of the Blackhawks, replacing John McDonough. I don't know how long he'll be the interim. It sounds like it's going to be a permanent situation. But in a really good interview with Charlie and Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago, he dropped this nugget, which I think was the news value of the interview. Quote, "We believe in Stan and are committed to him. He has a multi-year contract, and we're going to obviously support that. So we feel really good about that heading into next season." End of quote. So if there was any doubt that Stan Bowman was going to be the architect moving forward, it was removed by the interview by Danny Wirtz himself. So it sounds like that decision has been made, and all this conversation and speculation we've had about having a new director of hockey ops, it was a moot point because there are no plans to replace Stan Bowman.
Well, I thought it was interesting too that I saw him, as you say, he was making the rounds. I saw him in an interview where he was asked about Colleton, and he said that that's basically Stan's call. He basically said Stan's back. He has total support. He seems to like Jeremy, and that will be Stan's call. So it doesn't seem like there's any threat to the power of Stan Bowman at this point.
I don't think so. Did you think that was a nod to the hierarchy, or do you think that that was a message that they did not feel comfortable with Colleton necessarily moving forward?
I took it to mean that, I took it like 10 different ways. Like maybe I started thinking like maybe John McDonough thought it was a good idea to move from Stan, and maybe the Blackhawks, maybe ownership didn't feel like they wanted to spend money on a new GM and a new head coach and go in a different direction. And, I mean, this is all the stuff that's going through my head. And then I thought, like, that doesn't seem like there's any doubt that the interim tag is coming off and that we're going to be seeing the son of for a very long time here. And that's fine. I mean, I don't have a major problem with it, but it seems like he's jumping in and he's getting his footing, and he's not ready to make any kind of move. So they're sticking with Stan until he feels more comfortable in his role, and maybe he then will do something on his own.
Continuity. I think those are reasonable conclusions to reach, because we have to jump to something. We haven't heard from John McDonough. We have asked him, and he's, you know, respectfully declined, and I don't think he's going to say anything. That may have been part of the separation agreement. We don't know, but certainly Rocky Wirtz has never really explained that decision fully. We don't know. There are a lot of things we don't know when it comes to the Blackhawks, but one thing we do was removed yesterday. Stan Bowman is going to be the guy that they, I think, reinvested their confidence and faith in, and whether or not that was confidence and faith that John McDonough shared, I don't know the answer to that question. That's really interesting that was the interpretation you had, because I wondered as well, because this is somebody who suddenly, Stan Bowman doesn't have a lot to hang his hat on in the last several years. There have been a lot of decisions that have not been the right ones, and they have been out of the postseason, and which is why their presence in the playoffs meant so much this summer. So to have this sort of unconditional belief and support of a general manager who hasn't gotten it done in recent years was a bit surprising to me.
Yeah, you know, again, I think that from an ownership standpoint, you mentioned the word continuity. That's probably what is the ideal, especially in terms of financial continuity, right? You don't want to be paying a couple people, or you don't want to be kind of reaching outside yourself at this particular moment in time. So it makes sense. And, you know, I really felt when they made this move to begin with John McDonough, I was certainly surprised by it. But maybe that was part of their thinking, too. I don't know.
Well, it had to be part of their thinking because I think this was everything that was done in inserting Danny Wirtz in this interim role or in this leadership role was about the future. I don't think it was as much about the present, and the pandemic sort of forced them to pause and take a step back and to make these moves. But we'll find out. We'll talk to Charlie because they had a really long conversation. It was a good interview, and I think we're getting to know a little bit more about Danny Wirtz for a reason. And I think the reason is, as you said, Mully, he's going to be here for a while.
312-644-6767. That's the number. We're going to bring Charlie in next. We'll talk to him. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Steve Stone, Score baseball expert and TV voice of the Chicago White Sox, talks Chicago baseball three times a week throughout the season on the Score.
The Sox have a lot of room for growth. There's aspects of the game they don't do particularly well, but they're not supposed to. This isn't the finished product. It will be in the not-too-distant future, but right now we have to enjoy the ride.
Hear Steve Stone three times a week throughout baseball season on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station and official radio home of the Cubs.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.